Ha'edei Matzara we got into Masechet Ksuvos, if you recall, is because Ksuvos is about marriage officially, and the requirement to provide for the wedding, let's say, of Yosom and Soma, was the topic of the Mishnah, which brought up the whole issue of Dei Matzara. So we've been talking until now really about the more generalized Dei Matzara. So now to bring it back to where it came from, to talk a little bit about that idea of the wedding specifically, I'd like to spend a few minutes about that today. But first, just to get us where we were from yesterday. So yesterday, after going through various possibilities and talking about how one would contrast the obligation to sell luxury items before taking stock or before giving stock to someone who has luxury items, how exactly does that reconcile with the idea that one is supposed to provide to Anani whatever he is lacking from his previous lifestyle, even if that reaches a level of luxury? So how do you reconcile the two? We spoke about that for a couple of minutes yesterday and went through a number of possibilities. Where we had ended off, really where I want to pick up from today, is that we essentially saw there might be a structure along the following lines, that the obligation of Dei Matzara probably connects to a halakha v'drachah kind of idea, the idea of trying to be sensitive to the emotional suffering of the ani, even beyond the actual demonstrable objective needs. And that's really probably an obligation on the individual more than it is on the communal fund, which is an idea that we were able to perhaps read into the words of the Rif. We noted, though, that you seem to find the opposite in the Ramah and the Shach and others who seem to say that Dei Matzara applies only to the Tzibur and not to the individual, even though other poskim disagreed and thought they did apply to the individual. And the way we wanted to approach the issue is to say it's really three different levels. That really, maybe Dei Matzara is addressed to the individual as a concept, as an ideal, that there is a benefit to providing for an ani even beyond absolute physical necessities. The chiyuv of Dei Matzara, to say you actually have to get into that stage, that can't be on any individual because practically no one can pull that off on their own. So that is on the aggregate of individuals, that is on all of us together, as opposed to any one single individual. So it's on the tzibur in that sense. The kupa, the communal fund, where the administrators have to have a more objective sense as to how to give it out, that perhaps is where you get requirements like telling them they have to sell luxuries and the like. And that was essentially what we had gotten up to yesterday. So far, so good. Everybody's on the same page? Everybody's doing all right? Okay, so now just to say a few more words about that and then to segue into the wedding issue. So you also may notice that the Shulchan Aruch does ultimately paskin that Dei Matzara is something that is addressed to the community, whether or not it's a chiyuv on the community, but the recipients are really meant to be those who are within the community. And if somebody is traveling from place to place, if someone is coming from somewhere else and asking you for tzedakah, so then they're not subject to an obligation of Dei Matzara. Doesn't mean that you're supposed to send them away with nothing, you're supposed to make sure they're okay, at least for now. So that's what's called matana mu'etes. You give them a little bit of a gift, whether that means a meal, two meals, something small to get them from one point to the next, but you don't have an obligation of Dei Matzara in that sense. And if you saw, I was on this morning's Marmar Kol Mos Taz, gets into a little bit more detail about that. It's an extension of the idea of Dei Matzara functioning as a communal concept, whether it's directed to the community to give, to members of the community as recipients. We find this as a function of the aggregate of the population as a whole. And in terms of the obligation of marriage, of helping others out with marriage, so we find, we said, so our Mishnah tells us, the Mishnah before the Gemara, that here on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, the end of the Mishnah talked about V'chein HaMeisi Yasei Yisoma. If somebody is marrying off the Yisoma, so then there's a certain minimum. Lo Yivchos La Mechamishim Zuz. So we should marry her off in accordance with her level, and then that's where the Gemara picks up from this idea of Dei Matzara on the next Amud. So this idea that providing for the marriage of a Yosoma, providing for the marriage of anyone, is a function of Dei Matzara, which the Gemara goes on to state a little bit more clearly. So why should that be? Why should it be that not only is providing for marriage a stuck of priority, but it's a very high stuck of priority. So we find in the Shulchan Aruch that marrying off the Yisoma is even higher than providing for Aniyim in general on our priority list. So why should that be? Another thought, Menachem?
So because once she's married, she now has a source of support.
So I think that's a major part of it. I think that's very much high up in understanding why that is. That if we see that, as discussed yesterday also, that you're accomplishing much more when it comes to Sukkah, if you're not only helping them for today, but you are going to give them a Parnassah opportunity. So too, if you provide someone with a husband, so then that is hopefully lifetime support. So that's going to accomplish much more as far as stock is concerned. So that should go high on the list. Now, if you can say that's a reason to give it priority, which I think makes a lot of sense, so then you're saying that one of the reasons we prioritize things is based on how much we can accomplish. Right? As we started to discuss on our Sundays, there are a lot of different reasons why you may prioritize something. Maybe you'll go based on the need. Maybe you'll go based on what other side mitzvahs are accomplished at the same time. Maybe you'll go based on just how much of a splash you can make with this one act of tzedakah. So that's what Menachem is focusing on that here, that by providing a husband, so you are providing a lifetime of parnasa, so it's much more effective as an act of tzedakah, so that's enough reason to put it higher up on the list. But one could come at this question from a totally different direction. Was your hand up?
I just wanted to ask if the focus is she can now have support, that doesn't really apply to a yatam.
Oh, so that's an interesting question, right? So then, if one follows that approach, one might think that it's more about helping the Yisoma get married, so she will be supported, more than it is about helping, let's say, a Yisoma get married, so that he can support someone else. So that would seem to logically flow from that. But Maisa, practically speaking, the Shuvah Spitzel HaChachma, Bitzal Stern has a tshuva in which he notes that certainly helping a Yosem get married is also very high up in the list of priorities. Maybe the Yosoma is higher, but the Yosem certainly is not off of the list. So what other perspective might you come at? Why else might you say that this should be high on the list? If not to focus just on the impact you could have, what else, really?
You're just more of a mitzvah.
More of a mitzvah, why?
Because you're also doing this is
Chasim Kala. Oh, okay. So that's another possible approach. You could say, and this is something that we found when talking about stuck of priorities, and we'll see this even more probably this coming Sunday, that another reason to talk about a certain cause as high on the list might just be because it has additional concepts to it. So if you throw in other mitzvos, if you throw in other accomplishments besides helping someone eat, so then that might also be a reason to push something up on the list. So marriage is a mitzvah, right? We discussed that first semester, that marriage seems to be one of the tired mitzvahs. So presumably providing that for someone else is an accomplishment. Now that's interesting, just parenthetically. It's not 100% clear, this is really a side topic, but it's interesting to bring up, that helping somebody to do mitzvos straight, whether or not that's considered to be tzedakah, whether or not considered to qualify for, let's say, de machzaro, that's a discussion. The Prima Gadim assumes that it is. Let's say if you're going to buy tefillin for someone who can't afford tefillin, so is that an obligation of tzedakah? So one could make the case, as some do, that that's not really straight out tzedakah, that if a person can't afford tefillin, so then he's exempt. And so he's not in any trouble for not putting on tefillin if he can't afford it. So perhaps one shouldn't compare that to somebody who can't eat and who's going to starve. So maybe it's not really in the same category. Providing food for someone, that's tzedakah. Providing tefillin for somebody, maybe one could argue that's not tzedakah. So you could say, well, it's still valuable. Right? We want more people to be able to perform mitzvot. So if this man can't put on tefillin, and now he can because I provide that for him, so isn't that valuable? Yeah, it's definitely valuable. Is it the same thing as tzedakah? Maybe yes, maybe no. So it's an interesting question if you say, well, here, marriage is a mitzvah, so to what extent is that really driving us? Is it our concern that they should be able to perform the mitzvah al mitzvah, so that's why we're interested in bringing it about? Or is it that really the mitzvah is more connected to providing practical needs, and that's why it's a priority for us, especially if we emphasize the woman over the man, so that seems to have the advantage as far as sustenance. She's the one who gets supported more, but as far as the mitzvah is more, if not exclusively, on the man. We tend to assume that the mitzvah really is directed to the man specifically. There's a ran in the Sefer Kedushin where he notes that the woman is a participant in the mitzvah, of course, so therefore, I think at least that much, right? So therefore, that does count as some kind of a mitzvah. But if we're focusing on the mitzvah, it would seem that that's more of a issue you want to help the man perform the mitzvah, and that's where the priority is. If the issue is it's sustenance, so then that might understand, that might help us understand why we focus more on the woman's role here. It's also true that not all mitzvahs are equal, that we find that there's a great emphasis on the mitzvah of marriage, not just because of that key of mitzvah, it's a spiritual accomplishment, but that is the Yishuv HaOlam. This is what allows the population to continue, this is what makes a society stable, so we don't necessarily view all mitzvahs in the same way, and it could be that even if we don't say that when it comes to tefillin, it's necessarily in the category of Ben Mazzaro, it could be that when it comes to marriage, that's a different type of mitzvah, and even if we come at it from the mitzvah angle, it doesn't necessarily get the same calculus as other mitzvahs. So was that first Menachem, right? Okay, right.
Can another reason be about Busha, that maybe a woman care more about the marriage than the man?
Yeah, so I think that's also a very valid approach. And that would then give us a third point of entry. Right? So far we've seen this question approached from all different directions. So Menachem says it provides sustenance for a lifetime. So that's more about looking at it from how much of an impact you can have. It's a question of degree of accomplishment. Shmuley brings up the mitzvah focus, which is more about looking at it from other side accomplishments at the same time. So now Aryeh is bringing up the busha issue, which is focusing on the machsoro part. Right? The idea is the extent that somebody is in a state of chisaro, that's when you want to pay more attention to them. So perhaps this is much more of a profound sense of absence than any other type of loss. Which is also interesting that if we look at the whole flow of the Gemara, and so most of our time on this daf, we were trying to establish that day machzoro means davka, something that you were used to that you no longer have. Now in this case, it really seems to deviate from that. The marriage is something which there's no assumption here, certainly if we're talking about the Yisoma, sounds like we're not talking about somebody who is previously married, and we're not restoring someone to their lifestyle of being married, we're talking about somebody who never was married in the first place. So it's clearly a different type of de machzoro than we've been talking about for the rest of the daf. The rest of the daf we emphasize specifically that it only applies if it's something you were used to and had in the past, and we want to bring you back to that. Here, we call this day machzor, and we're talking about something else. So we saw the whole flow that there's really two different levels of day machzor. There is this objective need that humanity has. So that was the first day machzor passage at the beginning, where it talks about marriage, and it talks about residence, it talks about food, the certain basic needs that everyone has. And if you don't have that, that's called machzor, that's called the chisaro, no matter what. And then the rest of the Gemara was talking about these above and beyond needs, that those are only relevant, it's only called the chisaron if a person had them before and was used to them and now feels pain from not having it anymore. So this is in the first category, you're talking about something which not because you were used to it, it's because it's a need by itself, even if you've never had it before, it's considered to be a basic human need. So to provide that is within the category of de machzaro, and if we look at the Yisoma, so we look at somebody who feels that need perhaps in the most profound way. And both because she doesn't have anyone supporting her now, possibly without parents, and no one else who's going to take on this responsibility of bringing her to the next stage. So looking at it from that perspective, so the Yisoma getting married becomes a priority in a profound sense in terms of the need. So we saw from the three different suggestions, three different ways to consider this question as far as why would it be that this is given such a weight on the list of priorities. All right?
Does this relate at all to Talmud of Kandu, that she really feels like it's more than what a man would feel? She really
yes, but I don't know if you have to come on to that. I mean, yes, that's relevant, and the Gemara mentions that, but even without coming on to that, because that's more relevant when you're considering it against other issues. But here, before you even come on to that, we don't have to talk about whether she has an option of a better husband or less good husband, but the point is that the need for basic sustenance is one that everyone has, and that one that especially in this context every woman has, and especially if she's a Yisoma. So it's emphasized from two directions. She's more needy right now, before she's more in need of marriage to provide her with sustenance, and she's less likely to have someone to help her get to the state of marriage without a father to help with that. So if we focus on that, that's a third angle, which is certainly one that's very relevant to understand why this is going to be a high priority on our list. So if you saw the Shach, so the Shach quotes the Maharam Alashkar, who says that he thinks that here we have to focus on the word Yasom specifically and literally. Now you may recall, I think, from the first day of this topic, we talked about our sugya introducing the word Yasom, and what question we raised about that. Is Yasom literal only? Or is it a way of saying that somebody who's needy, and therefore Yasom is certainly in that category, but others could equally be in that category, or others could be along the spectrum of that category. So Yasom might just be a way of saying somebody who doesn't have anything provided for them. But the Shach quotes his view that it should be specifically Yasom, and a girl who happens to be poor but has a father is not in the same category, is not necessarily going to merit the same ranking. So why should that be? It seems to be fair to say that, listen, this is all about Sorech, this is all about need, and the Yasom represents a certain level of need, and an impoverished family that has a living father could theoretically be equal in the ranking of need. So it may depend on how you understand what it is that's driving this priority. The Ma'aril Diskin, if Shulei Diskin, was one of the Gedolim of Yerushalayim in the pre-state era, in the early 1900s, and was known as the Brisk Rav before the Soloveitchiks. Originally from Brisk also, so he was known in the Brisk Rav in a different context. So he has a discussion about this, where he considers that one might say that maybe what the Shach is getting at is that perhaps he understands the focus on the Yasoma. Maybe this is similar to what Shmuley was saying, is that the father has a mitzvah to marry off his child. So if the father is not alive, so then the community adopts that mitzvah. So now, because the father is not here, so now the kupa of staka is chayiv to provide for the marriage of the child, so then that gets priority dafka because of that. But if there's a living father, so then it's not the same thing. It's his responsibility, and that's a different story. However, the Ma'aril Diskin himself doesn't think that's really the compelling reason. He thinks it really is based on Sorech. It's based on the need that's present here and could theoretically be present even with a living father in a situation of poverty. Tzion Uziel, who was the Sfaradi chief rabbi of Israel, has a sefer on Hilchos Tzedakah where he also takes issue a little bit with the Shach's point. He says that, practically speaking, maybe we take a different route. We'd say that the father should collect from Tzedakah and then use the Tzedakah to pay for marrying off his daughter. But lamaisa, it's the same thing. Whether we say that she's prioritized as a Yasoma or we tell the father to take care of it through a straight Tzedakah route, he doesn't think, practically speaking, it makes much of a difference. I think Avi is up first, Menachem.
No, that's not
it. Okay,
Can you say that it depends on emotional support? That if she does have at least one parent, she at least has some emotional support. But if she doesn't have anybody, so we want her to have someone that she could go to, that would be the problem.
See, that's an interesting point. I was thinking it a little differently. I mean, I think what you're saying is true also, but I think what you're saying is the purpose of marriage is to provide not only financial support, but also emotional support. So if she has a family, any part of the family, so then she has a shtickle emotional support, which is true, and it's also part of how you calculate all the varied factors that go into the decisions. But by focusing on emotion a few minutes ago, it's thinking something else. It's thinking that the lack of this financial support and the lack of marriage and everything else that comes with it is a source of emotional pain, and that emotional pain is more profound to someone who is a Yasoma. So it's not that the marriage itself provides emotional support, which is also true, which is certainly also something to weigh into the whole story, but I was thinking that the emotional component comes from the single status, and that that's even more profoundly felt by Yasoma. So I don't know if having a mother present is necessarily going to mitigate that so much. It's going to add something else, but if we take away this...
Wouldn't that support, in terms of prioritizing someone who has no parents versus someone who has one parent?
Yeah, I guess if that was really right, so then when you're adding up all the factors, and if that was, you know, all things being equal, and you have to have two Yusomas of equal net worth and equal everything else, and one is completely orphaned and one has a mother, then I think it would be true that there'd be an even greater tzara in that sense. Obviously, it's rarely the case that you have such an exact computer formula, but that's part of the challenge of helpful stuff in general. So it's interesting, I think we are going to have to spill this over a little bit tomorrow, but there is this idea of talking about whether someone should be looked at as a ani in their own, or whether they should be looked at considering what other alternative sources of support they may have, whether or not that support is playing out. So do you look at the presence of a father and then figure out whether the father actually is providing support or not? There is a fascinating discussion in the Stipler, in the end of Masechet Sukkah, the last Stipler in Sukkah, in the current printings, has a discussion. Why is this in Sukkah? Not for the reason you might think. So last week we talked about a Gemara in the end of Sukkah that makes some comments about Staka and Chesed, and maybe you might think that's why. That's not why. It's really a kind of a fascinating connection. It has a kind of a random question there, which just brings us into this topic and makes an important comment about Dein Lachsoro. So it says the Stipler as follows. There is a Gemara towards the end of Sukkah, and Daf Mem Vav. The Gemara says that one should not say to a child that he's going to give him something and then not give it, because doing so will train him in sheker. He'll get the impression, oh, that's what adults do, they lie, and that's okay, and therefore you shouldn't do such a thing. Now that, I think we may have talked about that Gemara a little bit last semester when we were talking about lying with Nehashalom, because there are many fascinating questions you could ask about that Gemara. You could say, listen, aren't there other more basic reasons why you shouldn't do that? Isn't that a sheker problem? You shouldn't lie to anyone. So the basic understanding that's brought to that Gemara is that, yes, there might be good reasons in this case to reverse the decision, but because you're dealing with a child, you have to worry they're not going to understand the good reasons, and they're going to learn that it's okay to go back on your word. And we discussed in various cases how that may affect other things that you should be more careful about when dealing with children than when dealing with adults. So I asked Rav Chanan and the Kovei Tzaaris in the end of Yevamos. So that's a little bit of synergy, because today is the end of Yevamos and Daf Yomi, in terms of actually being at the end of Yevamos, at the back of Masechet Yevamos, the back of the Kovei Tzaaris and Yevamos. So there's a comment there by Rav Chanan, who asks on this Gemara, that, well, why do you need this idea that you're going to train him to lie? We have a halacha in Hilchos Staka based on Yerushalmi and Bav Metzia. I can give you this to look at. I just didn't want to let you more off track. But there is a din that if you tell an ani that you're going to give him something, you have to follow through. So isn't every child, by definition, an ani? Right? He doesn't have any ability, he doesn't have a job, this little kid. Doesn't have any sustenance. So why don't we say that the concept of ani applies to him? So essentially, what's the issue that the Stipler is dealing with then in taking that question to the next step? It says, here you have someone who doesn't have any money. So then that should be the definition of an ani. But, presumably, Mehastan, the child has a father who is going to support him. So how do you look at such a situation? Does the halachas of staka kick in when talking about this child who is, on the one hand, an ani, but on the other hand, has sustenance coming from somewhere else? How do the halachas of staka address such a person? That's essentially the question that the Stipler is picking up, because he says this halacha, that you have to follow through on the commitment, that's a din in staka. So do we treat him as an ani who receives staka, or do we say, no, that he has the father, it should go through that path? So it's a fascinating little discussion that he has over there, which essentially considers this question, and he essentially goes on to say that it's presumably true that on the one hand, yes, the child is an ani, because he doesn't have any money, but he's not entitled to the protection of staka because he has the metzias of sustenance coming, since someone's going to provide for him. So then we don't give him the halacha. He goes into the point of Dei Machzoro, he quotes our Gemara, says the halacha of Dei Machzoro, which directs us to give staka, is not going to apply in this case. So essentially what he's saying, it's a fascinating point to think about, especially to reflect on our whole past sugya, is really there's two dinim in staka. There's a din of an ani, and there's a din of someone who has a chisaro, in the Dei Machzoro. So the child is an ani without Dei Machzoro. without any chisara that you're obligated to fill, and this special requirement of the tzedakah commitment you can't go back on, that's the halacha of day machzara. So presumably you thought that shouldn't apply to him. But then, let's say you happen to know the father's not taking care of him, whether it's because the father is either impoverished himself or simply doesn't want to help his kid, either way, so then maybe that might flip things, and then he gets into the practical question of what about a yeshiva student, let's say. So you have a yeshiva student who right now has no income, has no money on his own, but let's say he's being provided for by parents, or let's say he's not being provided for by parents, but he's a student in the yeshiva. So the yeshiva provides him with room and board. So is that considered to be an ani? Can you give him a tanis levyonim on Purim? If he has his basic needs provided for by the yeshiva, to what extent is there a distinction to be made between ani and chisaron as directed by the halacha of Dei Machzaro in our sugya? I'll have to say a little bit more about that tomorrow before going to the very important dinner from the Gemara and Horius. Just want to mention the last paragraph that the disciple has there, which kind of flows in a good sense from what we said yesterday, that he also raises another suggestion, and maybe you could say that the din of Dei Machzaro tells us that even beyond what is necessary, if you want to give your tzedakah money to somebody, you can do that beyond the chiyuv. Remember yesterday we distinguished between kind of the heter of Dei Machzaro and the chiyuv of Dei Machzaro, and that's what we said, that the individual has the heter, so to speak, that it's legitimate for him to give his tzedakah money towards someone's more than basic necessities, while the chiyuv to fill that, that's on the tzibur. So the Stipler makes a similar distinction a little bit of a different way. He says that maybe you should say the Gemara has a drasha here that says you're not mitzuvah l'ha'ashiro, right? That you're not obligated to enrich someone. So you only have to give someone what they used to have and what they feel bad they don't have anymore, but you're not obligated to make them rich fresh without any precedent of being rich. But ask the Stipler, what if you want to? What if you decide that you have a poor person, and right now he doesn't have, and you decide you want to be ma'ashir him, you want to give him money beyond the basic necessities and beyond what he ever had before, and you want to do that. So he thinks, he says, the Gemara says you're not mitzuvah to do that, but maybe you're allowed to do that, maybe that's legitimate, and he thinks it might, he's not sure, it leaves it kind of a tzarafian, but he says that there might be a shtekel araya because there is a din, that on the one hand, you're only supposed to take tzedakah if you have less than 200 zuz, right? As we discussed a little bit, you have to be beneath a certain threshold to be taking tzedakah. But if somebody wants to give you, in one lump, wants to give you 1,000 zuz and push you way past the threshold, so they can. So Stipler says that might be proof that when somebody is an ani and has status chisaron, so then you are allowed, if you want to put him into a state of ashirus, and you can use maybe your stock money to push him way past this threshold and use that question. But sorry, so I'll just say a few more points halacha l'maisa about this tomorrow and then segue into the question from Mishnah and Horius and how that affects our Gemara, one of the most fascinating, controversial, and hotly debated Mishnayos, that the Mishnah and the end of Horius, how exactly that interacts with our Gemara. God willing, that will be our very significant topic to deal with tomorrow, God willing. Just to quickly, we spoke about the fact that the Dei Machzaro doesn't apply to somebody who's not really part of the community, according to Shulchan Aruch. You should give him a matana mu'etes. You shouldn't give him nothing. You should give him a little bit of a gift, what that means, a little bit of discussion. Let's say one meal, two meals. We discussed the Taz over there. And then we discussed how it's clear from our Mishnah, from all the sources after that, that marrying off the Yesoma is very high on the list of priorities of stock, and certainly qualifies as Dei Machzaro and as proper stock. And we talked about why is it so high on the list, and we saw three different angles. Either because you accomplish the most by providing them with sustenance for a lifetime, and that provokes the question, does it equally apply to a Yasum? The Tel Chachma says it does apply, equally maybe not, but a Yasum is certainly on the list. Other possibility is the question of maybe because the mitzvah of marriage that Shmuley brought up. So we discussed the question, how does providing for mitzvahs really line up as far as Dei Machzaro is concerned? So sometimes we do prioritize tzedakah because of other things. Is helping someone do a mitzvah considered tzedakah or not? Maybe yes, maybe no. But either way, maybe this is not a normal mitzvah. Maybe there's a mitzvah that has a different type of societal interest in making sure that it happens. And then the question also that maybe the need is felt more profoundly, and therefore from that perspective, Dei Machzaro cake takes a higher standard, and we saw the Shach quotes a view from the Rambam Ashkar that he thinks maybe it's Davki Yisoma. Yisoma is not just a way of saying a Nitzrach, but it's a way of saying specifically Yisoma. The Rambam Ashkar says maybe that's because the chiyuv to marry off your daughter, if there's no father, transfers on to the community, but he thinks really it is more about me. And we saw that Rav Uziel says that he thinks that, practically speaking, it's not going to matter. Maybe we'll tell the father to go on to work with Stalker, but ultimately it's the same thing. And then we discussed the stifler's question, how do you relate to a child who's technically an ani, but has a father, so has money coming from somewhere, but has no money of their own, is that considered to be a source of stalker? Now he discusses that in order to answer a question that if there's a din, they can't go back on a commitment to a stalker. Why does Gemara give a different reason why you shouldn't go back on this commitment to a child? Doesn't mean ani anyway. So in that context, he discusses these possibilities and talks about, can we isolate the two? Say there's a din of an ani and a din of someone who has the chisaron, and de machsaro goes specifically to the chisaron regardless of the ani, and the question of how a yeshiva student fits in, if a yeshiva student has parents, doesn't have parents, but is supported by the yeshiva, has room and board at the moment, how could that fit as far as halachas, matanas, labyonim, and the like? And then he raised the question, which also is consistent with what we said yesterday, to distinguish between kind of the heter and the chiyuv of day machzara, that even though our Gemara says you're not mechuyuv to give someone ashiras more than they had, but what if you want to, is that a viable use of your stucker money, and you use that kind of a tzarachian, but thinks that there might be a strickler right, and maybe it is. Okay, I apologize for going overtime. God willing, tomorrow, again, the sugya of Hatzol, a very important called Torah Kula sugya, so we'll just be ready for that. Okay, everyone should have a good day, stay warm, stay safe, stay fresh.